Hello, you lovely lot. I wanted to take a moment to share an exciting announcement with you all. I will be doing a live show for Happy Mum, Happy Baby at the Podcast Show in London on the 22nd of May. This will be a live episode of this very podcast featuring me and a very special, soon to be announced, guest. Get ready for a candid conversation, unfiltered truths, laughs, invaluable non-judgmental advice, and lived experiences. Dive into the complexities of parenting while juggling work, relationships, and personal growth. And we'll be talking beyond the baby years. As well as the live episode, the show will also include a Q&A with both me and my guest. Tickets go on sale this Friday the 26th of April at 10 a.m, but anyone who is part of the Happy Mum Happy Baby newsletter will be getting early access to tickets on Wednesday the 24th of April at 10 a.m. To sign up to the newsletter and for more information about the event, please head to happymumhappybaby.com/events. I can't wait to see you there.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. Last year I wrote a book called Happy Mum, Happy Baby, and once that was published, I just wanted the conversation to continue. So last series I invited a lot of friends along to talk about their experiences of being a mum and dad. Tom was involved. And this series is back and we're doing the same thing. In the book, I talk about miscarriage. It's kind of where I start the book, to be honest, because I felt like it was a massive part of my journey. At first, actually, when I started writing, I wanted to write it down and have it there and know that I could edit it out afterwards because it's something that I hadn't really talked about before that. As a result, I started getting involved with a charity called Tommy's, and actually I'm going to be hosting the Tommy's Awards again this week. So I thought this week the episode should be based around baby loss, and it's a subject that none of us really want to talk about, none of us want to even have it enter our heads, really. It's something that we don't want to even be faced with, but it's a part of life and it happens. And so I've invited two ladies who unfortunately know this area of life far more than I do and are equipped to talk about their experiences and stuff. They blog about it in the most beautiful way. So I wanted to talk to Elle Wright and Michelle Cottle about Teddy and Orla, their babies and their experiences. So welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Thanks
for having us. Not at all. It's a bit of a shift, this one, on the podcast. And I know, like me saying it's a difficult subject, you ladies are so used to it being called that. And I imagine that before, you know, your experiences with Teddy and Orla, when the subject arised of miscarriage or stillbirth or anything like that, how did you have those conversations before?
I mean, I don't know if I did have those before. I mean, I'd had an early loss before Orla, I'd had an ectopic pregnancy. So I kind of knew about early losses. Didn't really talk about them though, because I didn't really talk to anyone after that happened. But I think for me, I suppose the issue is that we don't talk about those things. So when Orla died, I just felt like I was completely on my own. I honestly didn't know that babies could die at full term in a healthy pregnancy. I just didn't have those conversations.
I think I'm exactly the same. I would say, yeah, a couple of my friends had had miscarriages and spoken about them very briefly. They were early miscarriages, mm-hmm. and I guess maybe they'd kind of dealt with them very well and been of the sort of school of, oh, you know, it wasn't meant to be, and and brushed it off, and you know, maybe they were hugely upset but didn't want to appear so. So I kind of went with how they were feeling and was guided by them on it. But I was exactly the same. As soon as I was pregnant with Teddy, and as soon as, you know, I was obviously pregnant, I just assumed that was it. You know, as we all do, you're pregnant and you're going to bring your baby home with you. So for me and Michelle, I don't think we realised it was a thing until it was too late and it had happened to us and we were in it.
Mm. Let's talk about your pregnancies and your births and what happened after that, really. So I don't know, Elle, do you want to kick off?
It's actually quite funny because Michelle and I were pregnant at the same time. We didn't know each other.
Yeah.
So I found out I was pregnant with Teddy. I didn't know I was having a little boy until he was born. But I found out I was pregnant in September 2015, had a healthy pregnancy. I was working full time. I was working in London. I was working in sales. I was in and out of meetings and off, up and down off the tube, and all perfectly normal and fine. Decided, because my job was like that, that I would take a little bit more time before baby arrived, just to kind of stop. Mainly because my car was so low, I couldn't get in and out of it at that point. I was kind of rolling out onto the pavement. And so I thought, you know, it's probably time to slow down and stop. So I had about 6 weeks off, I think, before Teddy was born, which was really good because I just went into nesting overdrive and did all of those things, cleaned all the unnecessary things. And I was actually induced at 39 plus 3 days. Right. So I was full term. But I woke up one Sunday morning and my waters were leaking. Of course, I didn't know. I thought I'd completely lost control of my faculties once and for all. I mean, it hadn't been that far off. The baby had been trampolining on my bladder. So I thought, well, this is it. So I called my mum, as we all do in that situation. And she said, well, maybe you should go to the hospital. Went to the hospital, was monitored, you know, for the rest of that day. And I'd said that baby's movements had slowed down quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But then, miraculously, we're in hospital and he starts, you know, trying to break out. And we were told to come back that evening because my waters were leaking. And they said, yeah, risk of infection is too high.
Yeah.
Baby needs to come out into the world. So they started the induction process on the Sunday night. So that was the 15th of May. And he was born the following day after natural labour. Lots of huffing and puffing and gas and air. And
you've seen the photos, you look glorious.
You do.
You look so elegant.
There is one photo that will never, ever be seen on Instagram. Or it's a photo that my husband took in the sort of the last moments when I'm leaning over a bed. And it's just the look of my face. And I'm not looking. I just look like a desperate woman. And I felt desperate in that moment, I think, as we all do. And then there's that moment of release and relief, isn't there? Where you're like, thank God.
Yeah.
And Teddy was born, found out he was a boy, and something wasn't quite right straight away. He was really quiet and his eyes were closed. And I don't know, I guess I'd watch too much One Born Every Minute. And to me, a baby's supposed to come out and, you know, all hell breaks loose. And I sort of remember sensing the quiet in the room, like the deafening quiet. And one of the midwives said, oh, Dad, do you want to cut the cord? We're just going to take baby away. And with that, hastily, my husband cut Teddy's cord and they sort of disappeared out the room with him.
Out the room?
Yeah. So I'm thinking, what the hell is going on? And after about 20 minutes or so, which obviously felt like a lifetime, and I'd, you know, delivered placenta and was back up on the bed being sorted out down there, shall we say? And this smiling consultant comes back in, bundle of baby and towels, and everything's fine. And, you know, he just needed a rub down with a towel and a bit of oxygen, and he's fine. And my husband's saying to me, he's fine, it's all okay. And, you know, we told our families and everything, happy memories, loads of happy memories, as I'm sure you have from your two boys. FaceTimed my mum with baby, and then because it was the evening, they said, you know, we need to get you back down to a ward, but because he was born with a few difficulties, we're going to put you on a ward where he'll be monitored a little bit more through the night, which for me was okay, yeah, fine, of course, that makes sense. So that was sort of late evening, and she woke me up initially, the midwife. I guess I'd been sort of snoozing. Nico was with me, my husband was with me, about an hour after we tried to go to sleep. I was exhausted because I'd been awake for like 2 days at this point. And she just said, Teddy's, or baby, we hadn't named him by that point, baby's really cold. can you just give him a cuddle? And I thought, yeah, that's fine. Babies can't regulate their own body temperature yet. Gave him a cuddle. And then she came back and checked and said, yeah, you can put him back in. And then the next time that she woke me up, that midwife, was about an hour later, and she was shaking my shoulder to the point where she was lifting me off the bed to wake me up. And all I ever remember her saying is, he's really cold, I've got to take him. And it doesn't matter how many times I tell this story, it just gets me every time, because I think, and I'm sure Michelle will agree, when you think about it again, you play it back in your head. Yeah. It's like with anything, you know, traumatic, you play it back in your head. And I guess the standout memory for me was as she lifted Teddy up, his arms flopped down by his side. And I think I knew in that second something was really wrong. And she ran away with him, and curtains were pulled around us, and a midwife came in and was sort of rubbing my arm, and it's okay, he's with the doctors, it's okay, he's going to be okay, it's, you know, not to worry, he's in the best place. About half an hour passed and we were taken to another room when a consultant came in to talk to us, and he sort of crouched down in front of us to talk to us, and I thought, oh, fuck. You know, this is not good news. And in my head, you know, the worst had already happened. But then he said, your little boy's really poorly. So I was thinking, he's not dead. He's not dead. That's all I remember thinking. But they said, well, you know, we can't look after him here because he had been revived for 18 minutes by the time they got him back. And obviously with a tiny little body like that. And he said, I don't know how long he wasn't breathing before we got to him. And I don't know what damage has been done. So the following morning, he was transferred from the SCABU unit, which was at that hospital, Royal Surrey, where he was born, which is a special care baby unit. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that until Teddy was born, because why would I?
Yeah.
And he was taken to Ashford and St Peter's Hospital in Chertsey, which has a NICU unit, which is a neonatal intensive care. Mm-hmm. Again, I didn't know what any of they were, just acronyms, they were just sounds to me. I knew nothing in that moment. He was there for 3 days before the consultants who were caring for him all agreed, as did other consultants at Great Ormond Street and other places they consulted with, that there wasn't anything that they could do for him. Mm. And he would say he was there for 3 days until they withdrew his life support. But they did that away from the unit, in a room with me and my husband, and we, you know, we were flanked by our parents and my sister-in-law and her husband, and every single doctor and nurse who'd had anything to do with his care was there. And they let us do it in a really nice way. Yeah. They let us, you know, hold him, and we read him a story. Because I'd be leaning over his crib, reading him stories, probably annoying the hell out of him for the whole time he was there, trying to will him to wake up. And we read him Guess How Much I Love You, which is not a book I've ever read since, I'll be honest. And he just, yeah, they took all his, what he didn't have in his wires or anything like that, or any of the things that he'd had on him those past few days. And he just looked like a little normal baby, like a beautiful baby, and he just looked like he went to sleep.
It's so lovely that you have those special moments with him, you know.
Yeah, and I do feel so fortunate, and I know I always say this to Michelle because our experiences are so different. Mm-hmm. And I have those really fiercely happy moments, those, oh my God, I'm bursting with pride, this is the best moment of my life, like you do when your firstborn child arrives. And then I have the other end of the scale. So I never really share the pictures of Teddy when he was in the NICU unit. I only have a few. All the ones I share are the ones from the day that he was born, when everything was fine.
And actually, you found Michelle a few weeks later. You know, little did you know that Michelle was going through, you know, your situation just a few weeks before, and you started blogging about it pretty much not that long after.
Not that long after. Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of weird because it's so weird listening to you sort of tell the early story of your pregnancy, because actually we were almost living kind of parallel lives and didn't know each other. I mean, we fell pregnant at, literally the same time. Yeah. I found out I was pregnant in September as well, and both of our babies were born in May. So, yeah, and both working in London, and, our stories were very similar up until, I guess, the point that, well, my story is slightly different with Orla because she was stillborn. So she died before she was born. I mean, I think, I was 37 weeks pregnant, so just a little bit.
Had you suspected anything?
No, I mean, I'd had, I look back at it with such, we talk about happy memories. I actually look back at my time being pregnant with Orla, and those few months, I can honestly say I was just blissfully happy. I'm probably one of those annoying people that really enjoys being pregnant. I do get the bloat and, all of that stuff, but I really, really was just so happy, and everything was fine. And in fact, at the hospital I'm at in South London, they actually give you scans at 36 weeks as standard. So I'd had that scan on the Tuesday and everything was fine. Everything was fine. And they're very thorough at my hospital. Like, they're a research hospital. So everything was absolutely fine. That was the Tuesday. And then by the weekend, I was still at work. Weekend came. I was kind of feeling a bit weird. Like, there wasn't anything in particular. I just didn't feel right. Mm. And I think that's something I'd always say to someone. Just trust your gut instinct. If you don't feel right, it doesn't matter if there's no specific symptom. If you don't feel right, just go and speak to someone. But I don't know. I just kind of thought, well, I'm coming to the end of pregnancy. I'm big, I'm heavy. And, maybe this is just what happens. You're slowing down. And actually, now I understand a lot more about movements, but probably on reflection, I think Orla was probably moving less that weekend. But it got to Sunday, and that was the day that I turned 37 weeks. I was full term, and it's this, milestone to get to. And I was like, do you know what? Actually, I don't feel right. I need to go and speak to someone about this. And obviously, it's Sunday night. So I ended up just going into hospital to the labour ward and just saying, I don't know. Something doesn't feel like it's right.
And did they listen?
They did. Yeah, they were very good. Like, I'd phoned my midwife beforehand, and she was like, yep, go up to hospital. They'll put you on the monitor. You'll be on there for half an hour and then you'll be back home. And I was like, yeah, that's what's going to happen. I'm just going to go up there. I'll be monitored and I'll come back home. It's funny because that day was the day that I'd allowed myself to wash all of Orla's clothes. Or we didn't know we were having a girl like them. I remember doing all the washing that day and laying out all of her clothes on the clothes horse to dry. And then we went off to hospital, and they sort of took us in. And I just remember sort of being taken into the triage room, laying down on the bed, and the midwife coming in and trying to listen in with the first time with the handheld Doppler, and she was sort of moving around and couldn't pick something up. And I could feel my anxiety building and kind of going, okay, she's struggling to find something here, that something's not right. And then she wheeled in the other machine, the CTG machine, and was starting to listen around with that. And I could hear what she could hear, because, it's quite loud, isn't it? Those machines are kind of woof, woof, woof. And I could hear that she was picking up my heartbeat, but that sounds very different from a baby's, because a baby's is a lot quicker. And I could tell that she was struggling again. So she went off and she brought in the doctor. And the doctor wheeled in one of the portable ultrasound machines and started scanning. And I was laying on the bed and the doctor was by my feet, and she had the machine. And Andy was sat the other side, actually. He couldn't see the machine, couldn't see the monitor. And I remember her going round with the wand and looking round. And I just remember looking over at that screen and knowing that what I was seeing is not what I should have been seeing, because it was just still. Like, I could see my baby in there, and I could see that my baby wasn't moving, and I could see that where there should be a thumping heart, there was nothing but stillness. And I remember in that moment thinking, I can't look at this anymore. So I turned and looked at the wall and just kind of thought, oh my God, I think my life is just about to collapse around my ears. And the doctor turned off the screen and put her hand on my leg and said, "I'm really sorry." And I, in that moment, I just knew. And she didn't, I'm pretty sure she didn't have to say there's no heartbeat, because she knew that I knew, and I knew what she had seen. I know that Andy hadn't, and I know, I can't remember exactly whether it was me or the doctor or someone had to say, "This is what's happened to you. I mean, your baby has died." And then it all, I don't know, it all sort of happened very quickly then. Suddenly the room was full of people. There was doctors and midwives, and I'm just laying there thinking, "Oh my goodness, like, this cannot be happening." And suddenly they're just all talking about delivery and birth, and you're going to have to be induced, you're going to have this baby now.
And that's something that people, I think, really don't know. I mean, I've had a couple of friends who have gone through it, and I had no idea that actually if something like that happens during pregnancy that you still have to give birth. Like, I had no idea that that was the case.
No, and I think at that moment you just think, how on earth do you expect me to do that? Like, is this some kind of sick joke? Like, seriously, is this a sick joke that you're going to expect me to actually have to give birth now? I mean, I can look at it from two sides now. I can see the person that I was then sat there going, no, you can't make me do this. Please just put me to sleep and just, you know, give me a C-section. You know, take my baby out. I can't do this. I don't have the strength to do this. And, you know, they're sort of saying things like, "Well, it's best for you, and if you want to have more babies." And I'm like, in this moment, I can't think about that. I want this baby. I want you to somehow make this baby alive. Like, how can you expect me to go through this?
Do you think emotionally and mentally it's also advised to do it that way? Because there's a feeling of you bringing that baby into the world. And
I think, I don't know, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because I know of people who have had to have C-sections in those circumstances, because actually their baby's in a position that they can't give birth to them. So, and I wouldn't say that their experience is less cathartic, valid, important. I think it is based on, I think it needs to be based on what's right for mum and baby in that situation. For me, looking back, I can't tell you how proud I am that I gave birth to Orla. And I think probably I would have felt like that however I gave birth to her. But I'm so proud, because that was one of the hardest, most torturous, emotionally, mentally experiences that I had to go through. Yeah, it was, yeah, it's hard work giving birth to a baby that's already gone. You have to do all the work, the baby can't help you.
Yeah.
But you just don't know. Like, I mean, I didn't know what my baby was going to look like. Like, would she look like a normal baby? Like, what would happen? And actually, you know, she did. And, you know, she was a beautiful baby. She was fully formed, and there's nothing wrong with her. And I guess that's the really difficult thing, is knowing that there was nothing wrong with her or with me. But no, I think now I'm able to kind of go, I'm really glad that I gave birth to her, and it's probably the best thing I ever did, and I'll always, always be proud of that. But I don't know. There's a big debate, isn't there, at the moment about sort of elective C-sections and, you know, giving birth, I say naturally, in inverted commas, because, you know, all birth is natural however you do it. And I wonder whether the shift in that, with people going through live baby labours, will kind of transpose onto babies that have already passed, and whether people will have more choice. I don't know, because I think in that moment I probably would have said, put me to sleep.
Yeah.
I mean, put me to sleep and don't ever wake me up. That's the reality. I didn't want to continue living. How could I? My baby had just died and everything had crumbled around me.
In that time following both Teddy and Orla's births, what do you do? Like, what happened in those first few hours and those days? Because obviously you've got people who want to hear from you, are expecting that news. Like, how do you actually go about handling that? Do you just shut the door and don't even think about it?
It's so difficult. And I think it was just when what should be the happiest news turns into the saddest. It's like everything we're expecting flips upside down and becomes the polar opposite to what it should be. And that's, you know, birth turning into death. It is exactly that, isn't it? And I think our human reaction to that is like Michelle said, I cannot carry on. This is not happening. This is absolutely the universe playing some sort of horrible trick on me, and it's all going to be fine, and I'm going to wake up and it's going to be over. And I remember the car journey that we had home from the hospital, where luckily my brother-in-law had gone down to the car and sort of hidden the car seat, you know, that we'd put in the car expecting to bring a baby home. And he'd sort of done all of that so that we could just get back into our car and drive home. And my husband drove us home, and it was like a 40-minute drive. I just remember sitting there in silence thinking, shit, this is my new reality. What the hell has just happened? And, you know, we went home that evening. My parents came back with us, and my mum said, you should go to bed, you need to rest. And I said, I can't sleep. I can't, what? We've just come home from hospital and my son's died, and well, let's all go to bed. And I didn't even know where to start. I just saw this expanse of nothingness out in front of me. And the thought of talking to anyone or telling my friends what had happened, because Teddy had been in hospital for a few days, obviously we dropped off the radar. So a lot of my friends already knew he'd been born and knew he was in hospital and knew he was very poorly. So the night that he died, I text one of my best friends, Zoe, and I just said, this is what's happened. I'm going to need you to tell everyone. I'm going to need you to tell everyone, because I can't say it. And, you know, it's times like that I think you really value. I mean, I just became so appreciative of how awesome my friends were. And she, I don't think there was anyone she didn't let know, you know. She covered all bases and she made sure. She even went into, like, my old workplace, who I was still, because she was close by to those guys. And I used to work in a hotel in a spa, and she went into the hotel that was down the road from her house to tell the guys who owned the hotel, who'd come to my wedding, who, you know, really good friends with, to tell them, because she didn't want anybody, you know, to come across me and ask if the baby had been born. I think she played out every scenario in her head, and we just shut ourselves off from the world for, I don't know, a few weeks. It feels like weeks. And I couldn't leave the house. I was utterly broken. I couldn't sit up in bed in the morning. I was everything I had to, you know, swing my legs around to the side of the bed and actually get up and do life. And I know Michelle and I have had that conversation before. Mm. Couldn't sleep, couldn't, you know, all those normal functions that you wanted living. I couldn't do it.
I guess as well, because of those 9 months, you're kind of gearing towards that moment. Yeah. And then suddenly that moment is so far removed from what you thought it was going to be.
The world continues around you. I did, when I was pregnant, I did NCT classes. I did hypnobirthing. I did yoga sort of, you know, a couple of times a week. I'd made all these local friends, all these mums that we were all pregnant at the same time. I know that a couple of the NCT babies were born the same weekend that I went into hospital. And that was really hard, because I just felt, I felt suffocated by the world continuing around me. I'd gone to all this effort to, I'd set up a life for myself, I guess, that I thought I was going to have, which was going to be maternity leave, coffees, walks in the park with my baby in the pram. And that continued for everyone else, and it didn't for me. And I just, I remember going out, leaving the house and walking, always with Andy. Like, I really struggled to leave the house by myself for a while, actually. Like, I just, everything became very scary. The world became a very scary place. And seeing people in the distance that I knew, that I'd met through various different classes, and literally crumbling and running back home and hiding at home and not leaving the house. I remember one particular instance of almost bumping into someone. And she was pushing her pram with her husband. And I honestly thought, oh my God, if I have to speak to her, I think I might just die on the spot. I don't know how I'm going to cope with this. And I just went home and sobbed and didn't leave the house again for days. And it's just this kind of, it's just such a surreal thing to happen, that the world does continue and other people continue to have healthy babies and can be happy, and yours just ends. And it's something that you just cannot put into words. Mm-hmm. It's so visceral. It's so
all consuming. That moment just becomes your entire life. And yeah, I think there is a point, isn't there, where you, like you just said, you look out the window and I remember sitting in bed and looking out the window and seeing all the light come through the shutters. I could hear the builders shouting on the roof opposite. I could hear people walking to work. And, you know, Teddy had died a few days ago. And I remember thinking, nobody has a clue. Nobody in the outside world has a clue what's just happened to us. Why would they? Mm. Life keeps going. The world keeps turning. And it was kind of like this lightning bolt moment where I thought, you know, you can either choose to participate in life or you can curl up in a ball in the corner and that is your a choice, aren't you? That is your choice.
Yeah.
And everybody always says, and I know that we both get this, you're so brave, you're so brave, you've been so brave. I don't think I'm brave at all. I don't, you know, I love Michelle, but I don't think she's brave, you know. I think I think she would agree. We're not brave. It's like anything with life. You get faced with something that you weren't expecting and you kind of take a moment and you swallow and you go, right, okay, how are we going to deal with this? And I think losing your child, losing a baby, although it's like the highest point of utter shit on the scale, it's no different. There comes a point where you say, okay, how am I going to deal with this? How am I going to move forward from this? Because I cannot stay in my bedroom forever with the shutters closed, crying. There has to come a point, you know, and whether that is walking down the street and taking a different path than you used to so that you don't bump into people. Mm. I started shopping at a different supermarket
really?
Because I was too scared for the women on the tills who'd spoken to me the whole time that I was pregnant. Oh, not long to go now then, you know, chit chat, they all do it. I didn't want to have that conversation with a complete stranger.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You find strategies, don't you? Like, I mean, obviously, both our babies were born in May, so it was a really nice, sunny time. I actually felt like the weather was mocking me. I wanted it to be
taunting,
dark
yeah.
and miserable and cold.
Reflect
and it wasn't.
My mood.
Yeah, it wasn't. It was sunny and the blossom was out, and I just felt like I felt like I had to go out, but I didn't want to. Yeah. It was really, I find the change in season very difficult. And actually, although I love this change into spring, it brings up quite a lot of difficult memories, really. But yeah, I would do things like I'd go out without contact lenses in. So the world was quite blurry. I couldn't really see people very far in the distance until they're up close, and then I could just pretend I didn't see them. I'd wear sunglasses, and which was socially acceptable, I guess, in that. That's why I was talking about the weather. You know, when it's sunny, it's okay to kind of wear glasses. And those sorts of things I would do just so that I was taking those baby steps of like going out and dipping your toe in the world again, but still feeling utterly broken. And yeah, I think those first things, you do whatever you can, shop in different supermarkets, walk, go out at night. We would go out actually at night, Andy and I, and walk around the streets.
I walked Boris at night because I didn't want to bump into anyone who I'd bumped into while I was pregnant.
And also you just think, people who've maybe had babies, they're safe, they're going to be at home. I'm less likely to bump into babies at night. Your whole world becomes like navigating, just trying to protect yourself, because you're so fragile that you do anything you can to kind of wrap yourself in some kind of bubble wrap and keep yourself safe.
Avoid certain situations, create ones where, it's just a permanent sort of time continuum of trying to find a new normal, I guess.
And it's everything. It's everything. It permeates every aspect of your life. It's not...
things that you don't even think about.
Yeah. It feels like nowhere safe.
Well, it's everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's on the TV, it's adverts, it's in magazines that you would have had lying around the house. It's,
yeah.
You know, on buses that go, but you don't know where those little things are going to...
Yeah.
And when you're expecting a baby... I don't know if you guys both found this, but when I was expecting Teddy, particularly as I sort of came towards the end of the pregnancy and, you know, I was on maternity leave, everything changed. You know, my hobbies and interests changed. My Instagram feed changed. Following mother care and all those kind of things. And suddenly, you know, all the people that I was following on Instagram, that kind of changed, and I was going to be a mum, and it was all going to be lovely, and it was spring, and I was going to be again walking around Blossomfield Parks with my new baby, and you just get this sense that you've been well and truly unceremoniously booted out of the club, brutally, and that's what it feels like. You see all these other women with prams, and you think, no, why? That was me. I was at the door. I put my coat on the rail, I was in. And then, and it just...
It's so true. I remember, it felt like everywhere there were people pushing prams. And I do remember we were driving back from the funeral home one day. We went there to visit Orla, actually, every day that she was there. I just felt like I needed to kind of consume every moment I could with her. And getting stuck at the traffic lights next to the park near where we live, and it just being full of mums pushing prams. And I just remember turning to Andy and going, will I ever be one of those? Will that ever be my life? Because it feels so far away right now. And you just suddenly feel, you feel like you're not part of that club. And then you also feel that people who were in that club are scared of you. Like, I think I was terrified of how I'd respond to people if I bumped into them, but also how they'd respond to me. And I remember having this horrible situation. This was weeks later. I managed to go to a local cafe to meet my yoga teacher, who has become a very, very good friend. Like, she's just awesome, absolutely awesome. And she was just came round and held my hand, in those kind of early weeks. And I was kind of brave enough to go out and meet her for a coffee, and someone who was from my yoga class, who was weeks behind me in pregnancy, turned up, and I think she was overdue by that point, so she's heavily pregnant. And I saw her, and she saw me, and I saw in her face what I feared was that she was scared to see me. And you feel like such an outcast, and like you just feel really ashamed that someone could look at you, and you can see the terror in their face, that they're like, oh my God, what do I do? What do I say? And she couldn't get away fast enough. And in some ways, I was glad because I was like, oh,
I don't want to talk to you.
Yeah, please get your lovely, beautiful bump away, because I can't, I'm so jealous. I'm so jealous of where you are. I'm so envious. And I feel so broken by the fact that I don't have my bump anymore and I don't have a baby. But it also just felt, horrendous. It was everything that I had feared. I remember the Instagram post I put up that day or the day after, and I was just in bits because I was just like, I miss the old me. Mm. I want to be me again, who was in that club, who was accepted in that club and was happy. And I don't want to be the person that I am right now. I don't want to be broken. I don't want to be the one who is scared of the world because the world seems to be pregnant or has a baby. And I found that very, very hard, this kind of, you're in the club and then you're not.
It's the way that people look at you that are just... Yeah. We always joke about the sympathetic head tilt.
Oh, no, I do it all the time. It's the thing with me. I know. Head tilt.
But it is... It becomes like a bit of a running joke when... I think with anything in life, sometimes if you didn't laugh, you would just cry continually. And people's reaction becomes exactly that every time they say, are you okay? Are you okay? They tilt their head to the side and you just think, just don't ask me how I'm feeling. Because that was one thing that I found, is my friends didn't really know what to say. You know, they'd never experienced it. They couldn't help. No one could help. It happened. And so everyone just kind of looks at you and tilts their heads and says, how are you feeling? And it's probably the one time in your life when you are not equipped to say out loud how you are feeling, because you can't even put it into words. It's such a pointless question, how you feel.
And you can't answer, I'm all right.
Oh, yeah.
Fine.
What do I say? Do I lie and do what all British people say and say, yeah, fine, how are you? Because that's what we do, isn't it? And because I'm not fine, do I just say, my baby's just died? I feel utterly broken and really crap and actually... So it just, there's no good question to ask, I think.
But it's an interesting thing though, isn't it? Because I think we spoke, Al, before, and you've said to me how someone can ask you about your grandparents and you can say, actually, you know, I've just lost my gran. And they'll be like, oh, I'm so sorry. And the conversation carries on. Whereas if someone asks you about if you're a mum and you say, actually, yes, but unfortunately Teddy died, the conversation sort of ends. You see the panic on their faces and they don't know what to do. And that's why we're having this chat. That's why we do so much work with Tommy's, because we want those conversations to not end there.
Yeah.
But people don't know, like, how do you continue that conversation? It's only through working with Tommy's and meeting you, Michelle, that actually you love hearing Orla's name.
I love it. See, I absolutely love it.
But so many people would naturally kind of think, it's such a bad thing that's happened and you don't want to talk about it.
We mustn't talk about it. And I think we're programmed, aren't we? Society has taught us that for decades and decades, that it's an okay subject, and it is so terrifying, it is so unthinkable. We were saying on the way over here, you know, I think that's why our friends didn't know what to say and couldn't quite help, because your mind never quite lets you go to that place that is totally unthinkable and totally dark, and you know, you can't fathom what that might feel like. So it doesn't allow you to step into that place. As a friend, you're very helpless trying to help somebody who that's just happened to. And I think that was why, for me, when I felt like I was losing my mind because nobody understood me, and I, you know, I turned to Instagram for very different reasons, to be able to scroll through and a feed of nice interiors or whatever it was I wanted to look at that day. And I think because I'd shared photos of Teddy and linked them to our fundraising, I mean, say what you want about that Instagram algorithm, but on that day, it knew what it was doing, because in my suggested pops up a photograph, and it was a wall and it had graffiti and it said London.
I remember that day. Oh my God, I remember that day.
And Michelle had written a post about how she'd just gone back into, re-entered the world, and how difficult it was, and how she couldn't walk down the street without wearing sunglasses. And she was surrounded by pregnant women and she didn't know what to do. She wanted to run screaming. And I just remember thinking, that's me. That this woman is writing And my heart was literally in my throat because I thought, she lives in London, she's not too far. You know, be my friend. I mean, desperate or what? And I could see people commenting, and they'd lost babies too. And I was thinking, what is this world that I've just, you know, scratched the surface of? And I remember thinking, sod it, I'm going to say something. So I just commented and said, you know, I've just read about all of them. I'm going through this journey at the moment too, and it sucks. And, you know, I think I just said something like, hang in there. Because I wanted to say something positive for her, because I could see her words and see how much she was hurting. And within a couple of minutes, she replied to me. And later that day, you sent me a message and said, we're going to start a WhatsApp group. This might not be your thing. I know I don't know you, but do you want in? And I was like, yeah, more than you could ever know. I want in. And, you know, that for me was the moment, probably the tipping point between going from nobody understands me, nobody's going to get this, I am the only one that this has ever happened to thank God somebody gets it. You don't ever want any of your friends to get it. And it's just sad that there are other women out there who do get it because they've lived through it. But to have them, and to have them to talk to and to, you know, moan to quite often, or say the things that you can't say in front of your friends because you feel like you're going mental and they won't understand. I can say it to these guys and they're like, yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, me too.
It just goes to show as well the power of social media. It's you know, rubbish so much. There's so much negativity around it. But actually, if you get in the right community, it's amazing. And for you girls, it's literally brought you so close together.
I mean, it's a life changer.
What made you start sharing in the first place, Michelle?
I can't remember a specific moment. Those months feel quite hazy. I think what happened was that in those early weeks after Orla died, Andy and I, we were thinking about how are we going to survive this. And we decided together we were going to go away. We're going to go away for a few months. Obviously, I was on maternity leave with no baby. He was able to take some time off, and we decided to go away. And Andy wanted to do a bike ride from Canada to Mexico. Just, yeah, just one of those
just
things.
A few miles. Just like Andy.
Nothing big.
So I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to cycle because I can't really ride a bike. So, yeah, I'll come and drive, and, you know, this will be an adventure together. And then we thought, oh, okay, I wonder whether we could raise some money. I wonder whether we could do it as a fundraising thing. And then I was like, okay, well, maybe social media is the way to go to do that. Maybe I could, you know, get some help and guidance on how do you use social media for good stuff. And somehow that's how it all came about, and it all does feel very hazy, and I just can't really remember vividly that time, because I think it was literally just survival. It's like I needed to put the words out there to say my baby died. My baby actually died, and I'm still living. It was this weird, I was thinking about this the other day, this weird sort of, you feel like you're most weak and you're most broken, and also you're most strong and powerful both at the same time, because you think, this awful thing's just happened and I'm still breathing. I'm still standing.
Yeah.
Like, language and talking and sharing. I know that is what makes a difference.
And I think both of your posts are incredible. That's why I think it's so important that people share. You know, you've had Esme, and you're talking now about postnatal depression, but also that guilt and everything that comes of thinking about Orla. I just feel like, get on those blogs, even if it's not something that you've experienced before, read about what other people go through, because it's so important.
The effect is kind of longstanding. It's not something that you just kind of get over or move on from.
No.
And it does impact on later things like having other babies. And I was very lucky, I had Esme very quickly. But actually what it meant was that my grief was sort of put on hold, and it all came out when she was here. And I suddenly was, you know, at home, and I couldn't do all the things that I could do to manage my grief, and it all came spilling out. But I think you don't just lose a baby, you lose the whole future. I remember, although I found babies very difficult, I found children very difficult as well, because all I could think was, Orla's never going to be three, she's never going to be four, I'm never going to hear what her voice sounds like. I wonder what, you know, what kind of things she would have been into. And that doesn't stop. Like, I'll always wonder that, because every baby's still, I'm sure your two boys are really different in their sort of characters. And having Esme doesn't take away from what I still wonder about smaller. I really wonder, would she have had blonde hair?
It stays with you. I was having this conversation with my mum a few weeks ago. Now I look at toddlers and I think, I wonder if Teddy would have been about that size. I wonder if, you know, he would have looked like that. I wonder if he would have been the kid screaming in the restaurant, throwing things around that everyone's saying. Of course not. He would have been an angel, just for the record, obviously. you know, and that's the other thing about we probably have developed quite a dark sense of humour in the fact that when your child does die, I mean, there aren't many good pointers you can pull from it. But, I mean, you can certainly put them up on a pedestal and pretend that they would have been an absolute, you know. And we do, don't we? We joke about it. And I think you kind of have to do that. And, you know, I'm sure 18 years down the line, it's going to be people at university that make me think, oh, I wonder if Teddy would have gone to university. And it never stops. The ripples go out so far and wide, further and wider than you could ever imagine. And not just for us either, I think for our families and our friends.
What advice, or if you could offer any words, to the families and the friends of people going through it, what would you say to them?
I think everyone is so different in what they need and their grief. And I know what I need now is probably very different than what I needed before. I think continuing to include the baby forever, you know, sort of acknowledging birthdays and Christmases and talking about them and wondering about them and sharing when you think about them, because I don't doubt for a minute that everyone in my family and my friends, they think about Orla for various different reasons, and often, you know, nice little things like, oh, I was, you know, shopping and I saw an Orla Keeley, you know, mug or whatever, and it made me think of Orla, and those sorts of things. It's, you know, just talk about her, tell me that you're thinking about her, because the further we go away from their birth, the more I feel like sometimes she's becoming like a figment of my imagination. Like, did she really exist? Did she really exist? And she exists because we talk about her, and that's what I would say, is just talk.
And it's just nice to know when people aren't afraid to say their names out loud, and it makes me think they still see me as a mum. It's not necessarily the bereaved parents themselves who get in touch with me. It is the sisters, the friends. Every week, every few days, I get a message. My friend's in hospital, she's just found out her daughter's going to be stillborn. Help me. What do I say? What do I do? Do I send anything? Do I not send anything? And then they're punched out in a moment of utter, I have got no idea what to do. And I always come back with, you know, the same, just please don't not say anything. Please, even if you haven't got the right words, which I'm sure you don't feel like you have the right words, because none of us do, there aren't any right words to say. I mean, just send a WhatsApp with a load of hearts in it. I mean, send a pigeon. I don't care. Just send something that shows that person that you are acknowledging that they are have just lost their child and they are having the utterly single most awful moment of their life, and that when they need you, doesn't matter when that is, if that's 2 weeks or 2 years down the line, you are there and you are ready and you will welcome them with open arms. Because you don't equally, although I think you want to know that somebody is there and your friends are thinking of you, there's never a worse time to be suffocated because life is so suffocating. Yeah. Life is so noisy and terrifying. The last thing you need is your phone permanently. You know, we need to come and see you. We need to come and see you. I need to see you. I need to...
I think it comes about their need rather than yours. I definitely had people who said, I just need to see you. And like, for some people, I wanted to see them and I was like, yes, I need to see you too. But for some people, it was like, oh, this just feels a bit odd because I wouldn't have seen you otherwise. So this does feel a bit strange. I think the thing that I would say is, whatever you do, whatever you say, just say out loud what you're kind of thinking, like what your thought process is. It's like, I've got some very lovely, thoughtful friends, like particularly psychologists who think an awful lot anyway. Actually, something that really I found very, very helpful was someone saying, like, I wanted to buy you this, I've decided to buy you this, I don't know if it's the right thing or not, this is what I was thinking, you might not agree, but here it is, and if it's right or wrong, then you tell me. And it was just helpful knowing what her thought process was. Like, she didn't know whether it was helpful or not, and she told me, I don't know if it is, but I'm going to do it anyway. And I found that quite liberating, that I could just say, yes, that's helpful. No, that's not helpful. They gave me the permission to say whether I liked it or not, or it was helpful or not. I didn't have to kind of get up the courage to say, oh, when you did that, that was really difficult or awkward, or I didn't need that, or that was unhelpful. They were able to say, and just, yeah, they led me into that to say.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of, even before coming on here, last night I messaged you both and was like, I'm going to be clumsy. I'm going to be clumsy in my wording because it's not something that I've spoken about before, but I feel passionate about the fact that it's a conversation that has to be had. I feel like I want this podcast to exist and to talk about Teddy and Orla. But there is that thing of you don't want to say the wrong thing and you don't want to offend, but actually just trying to have that conversation is possibly the better thing rather than kind of going, I don't know, and just closing yourself off.
Nothing's more deafening than silence is what I've found.
I would have crumbled if I thought I was on my own. Yeah. I wouldn't be sat here, that's for sure.
Well, thank you so much for being sat here and being on this podcast. We end each episode finishing three sentences. So the first one is, being a mum means?
Being proud of that child and what you've brought into the world and what you've, you know, what you've become and what you've done, because ours is quite a different narrative of motherhood.
Yeah.
But it still makes me feel really proud that Teddy made me a mum.
And the legacy that you've continued, you know. You've both raised an unbelievable amount for charity in their names.
Thank you.
It means loving fiercely, whether they're in your arms or they're not. It's something that is, it's in your heart.
The next one is, since having children, I'm
an emotional wreck.
And that is something that never leaves.
End of story.
I think I have learnt more about myself than I had in all of my life up until that date.
And the final one is, I'm happy when?
I'm happy when people say Teddy's name out loud.
I would say the same. I think I'm happy when my family is acknowledging that includes Orla.
Thank you. Thank you for being so open and honest. I've not been shy in saying that I thought this was going to be a really difficult one. We have all cried. I have done many head tilts, but it's a natural thing for me, I promise. I would have done it. Whoever was in the room, I would have tilted my head.
It becomes a nervous thing. As soon as you say don't do it, you can't stop yourself.
My head and I nod. It's what I do. But please go and check out the ladies' blogs. It's Feathering the Empty Nest and Dear Orla. They're both amazing and really fascinating reads. You know, whatever you've gone through in life, I think they are really insightful and emotional, but really important to read. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you for having us.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.